Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. And what next for Venezuela? And what does the death of Hugo Chavez mean for the United States? With us now, Moises Naim, Senior Associate in the International Economics Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's a columnist at El País. He himself is a former Venezuelan trade minister before Chavez and the author of The End of Power, From Boardrooms to Battlefields and Churches to States, Why Being in Charge Isn't What It's Used to Be, Also with us, Shannon O'Neill, Senior Fellow for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico, the United States, and the Road Ahead. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. Hi. Thank you.
Good morning.
And let me start like this. Everyone is talking about Chavez as this unique, larger-than-life socialist character, but I want to go beyond that. He had passionate supporters and passionate detractors in a country riven by class divisions. So I wonder, Mr. Naim, does his death really change anything, or do those same fissures in Venezuelan society now attach themselves to the next generation of politicians who might be more socialist or more free market?
Yes, that's a very good intuition, Brian. One of the tragic legacies of President Chavez is that he used the politics of revenge and division and polarization to create a lot of support for his government, for his ideas. And that has now become entrenched. And you're right, this is going to be with the country for a while, and it's going to be very, very hard to solve. And it's one of the tragic legacies of President Chavez.
Shannon O'Neill, same question. How much is this really about Chavez, who is a larger-than-life media figure, and how much is it about ongoing divisions in Venezuelan and Latin American society?
Well, Chavez tapped into a whole host, a huge percentage of Venezuelans who felt left out of the political process in the decades before he came onto the political scene. And it's going to be hard to, again, remove those people, say, from the political process. But whoever comes in next, the challenge for opposition or the Chavez party will be how to engage those people, but also engage the rest of the society, that many of whom feel they've been left out over the last 14 years.
So you think, Shannon, that his populism and his style of anti-poverty efforts will continue in Mr. Maduro or whoever, carries on his legacy?
Well, I think it's important to be socially inclusive, whoever comes in. In fact, the rival candidate during the last fall elections talked about this third way, social inclusion. The issue for Maduro, whoever else comes next, is they're not going to have the economic leeway and the patronage system that Chavez had. We've seen oil at record high prices. They're always volatile. But we also see the Venezuelan government really run unsustainable fiscal deficits over the last several years. And so that economic path that he had really isn't going to be open to his successor for the long term.
I want to invite call-ins from Venezuelan Americans in our listening audience. I'm sure there are some people listening right now who come originally from Venezuela, and we want to give you voice in the public square for a few minutes. What are your own emotions? I know a lot of Venezuelans in this area, I think, are really no fans of Hugo Chavez. So one way or another, what are your emotions? What are your hopes and dreams for your country at this point, or your country of origin? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If there are any Venezuelans listening who want to chime in at this moment of transition, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Moises Naim, I presume that since you were a government official in Venezuela pre-Chavez, and from other things that I've read of you and about you, you were no fan of Chavez. And you want to talk about that for a minute, and mostly, again, with respect to the future, what kind of change you would like to see?
Well, yeah, I am not a fan of President Chavez. I think it's quite evident that after 14 years and almost $1.5 trillion of income that he was able to spend in any way he wanted because he didn't have any of the change and of the checks and balances that are normal in a democracy. He was a master at undermining democracy using democratic means and therefore concentrating power. So he had a huge windfall of money that he was able to use in any way he wanted. And he also had a very big blank political check given to him by Venezuelans that were fed up with the current situation and the past. So, but conditions, those very favorable conditions, the country after 14 years is not a better country than what he received. It's a country that has the highest murder rate in the world. It has the highest inflation in Latin America. As Shannon was saying, it has an unsustainable economic policy that will need to be adjusted and therefore create a lot of unpopular backlash against whoever is in charge. And whoever is in charge will be forced to make very, very painful, popularly painful economic adjustments. The future is that, Brian. The future is one in which whoever is in charge will have to give the Venezuelan population very bad news in terms of the declining standards of living and showing that what President Chavez had launched was a completely unsustainable system that, in fact, was based on oil money and the exclusion of anyone that dissented with him.
Shannon O'Neill, what could it mean for the United States if a more friendly government takes over? Does it matter much to this country?
It matters to the United States in our efforts to reach out to countries around the world and also for stability within this hemisphere. So there it matters. If you look at the speech that the then Vice President Maduro, now heir apparent to Chavez, gave yesterday, it doesn't look like we're going to see a change anytime soon in the animosity, the level of tensions between the two countries. And in fact, yesterday he expelled two U.S. diplomats, as well as suggested that perhaps the United States caused Chavez's cancer. So in the short term, I don't see a lowering of the tensions. But there are many ties between our two countries, trade ties, commercial ties, ties between people. So there could be a possibility in the medium to longer term of a shift in what have been quite tense relations.
Same question, Moises Naive. I mean, Venezuela is the number four supplier, I believe, of oil to the United States. So I guess it kept flowing here even under Chavez, despite the tensions between the two countries. So how much does the direction of Venezuela really matter to Americans?
It matters. It matters for a variety of reasons, including the fact that, as you said, it's one of the main oil suppliers. But it's a declining oil supplier because of mismanagement and lack of investment and the politicization of what was once a highly technocratic industry, the oil industry. Oil production in Venezuela has been declining, and oil exports have also been declining. And it's very telling that the passing of President Chavez has not had any impact on oil markets. You would have expected that the possibility of turmoil in Venezuela would have created even some reaction in world markets, but that hasn't happened. And that's a testament to how little significance or how declining significance Venezuela has in those markets. But as Shannon was saying, in the medium term, long term, one would hope that the United States and Venezuela will reestablish more normal relationships. But again, I fear that in the short term, the Venezuelan government, if it continues to be run by the Chavez-designated successor, will have to use all kinds of enemies, of external and internal enemies, to blame the situation. And what better enemy than the United States to blame the United States on everything that is not going right in the country and blaming the traditional internal enemies of the government?
Moises Naim with us, a former pre-Chavez trade minister for Venezuela, now at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and Shannon O'Neill, senior fellow for Latin America Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Adriana in New Providence, here on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
Well, what I wanted to say is that I am happy because there is a new opportunity for Venezuela. Chavez is an extremely charismatic leader. he has become this god to the majority of Venezuelans that don't have education and don't understand how to run a government. He created a state where people live from the state, from the government, instead of creating a government that was supported by the people, by the taxes of the people. An economy that runs that way never works. He always says that he's helping the people, but actually he has taken job opportunities and work from the people. Yes, he's giving money to them by free, but he's not giving them work. What people need in Venezuela is opportunity to work, to develop, to work for themselves. They don't need a charismatic leader that gives them the fish and don't teach them how to fish.
Right.
How to fish.
Adriana, thank you very much. And Rafael in Newark, originally from the Dominican Republic. Rafael, thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. Thanks listening to my question. Venezuela, through Chavez, have provided Latin American and Caribbean countries with favorable arrangements to provide supply oil for them at a reasonable, very reasonable price. I wonder what is going to happen to that under a new government?
That's a really interesting question. Shannon O'Neill, you want to take that?
Sure. There are many countries, and Cuba is the most obvious and is probably the most important for the Cuban economy. When you look at Maduro, if he continues, if he's the next president, he has quite close ties with many of these nations. So you would imagine that this part of the foreign policy might continue. The constraint, though, will be the economic constraints that both Moises and I had mentioned before. Can Venezuela really continue to give away oil or provide it at such cheap prices to other nations? So as you look forward in the coming months and years, and particularly if the government would perhaps change, these countries would in turn suffer in terms of their economies, given they wouldn't have such cheap oil.
And with respect to Cuba, Moise Naim, Venezuela supports Cuba economically. Any reason to think that that would end to a point where that would affect Cuba's direction?
Yes, and it depends who is in government. And one of the untold stories that is not well understood yet, but it will hopefully in the future, is the extent of Cuba's influence in matters in Venezuela. If that happens and that continues, the Cubans have nothing to fear, and they will continue to receive Venezuelan oil. I mean, the Cuban government. And in fact, one can argue that very needed reforms that were about to be launched in Cuba in terms of liberalizing the economy and other changes have been postponed thanks to the cushion provided by the Venezuelan subsidy, which at this point runs is much higher than what Cuba got during the Cold War from the Soviet Union. I also wanted to mention, Brian, that it's not just Cuba. Other countries, as Shannon was saying, in the Caribbean are recipients of Venezuelan subsidized oil. One that is going to be also can be quite hard hit is Haiti. Haiti, about half of the budget of Haiti is subsidized by Venezuelan oils and oil proceeds. And the Dominican Republic also is a recipient of Venezuela and Nicaragua. So there's a variety of countries that now enjoy supplies at a discount in Venezuela, as it's the city of Boston, thanks to the good offices of Joe Kennedy.
Donato in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I listen to your program every morning. It's a pleasure to call with Dr. Naim on the line. I wanted to ask him to talk about, please, about policies to reform what I think is the biggest failure of this government, which is the increasing amount of violent deaths every month, over 400 deaths. Due to violence in the month of February alone.
From violent crime?
Yeah, exactly. My dream for Venezuela that the country unifies. Chavez was had a very violent rhetoric, and I think that is going to give us like incredibly hard things to overcome in the future.
To reconcile. Thank you very much. And there was a spike in the murder rate during the Chavez years, hasn't there? Hasn't there been, Dr. Naim?
Yes, in fact, that's one of the legacies, of the tragic legacies that of the Chavez government, is both where the polarization and the division that he stoked, it was there, but certainly he made all his efforts and all he could to stoke that in order to create support for his government. And the second tragic legacy is this murder rate. And it's very surprising how a president that was so active in every facet of public life, he had an opinion and a policy for everything that went on in the country. He created these missions, which is a military term that he applied to social programs, and he had all kinds of missions. But yet, he was so complacent, silent about crime and about violent crime. Venezuela is today one of the most violent countries in the world, and the murder rate is one of the highest in the world. By the way, that murder rate is hitting the most the poor people that he claims to represent. Yes.
We are almost out of time, but in our last minute, Shannon O'Neill, let's get back to the United States' role in the upcoming elections. President in waiting from the Chavez camp, Mr. Maduro, expelled some Americans this week, as you mentioned. And the general rap on him for that is that he, you know, was anticipating the death and the election campaign and scapegoating the United States. But what was those Americans' role? Washington will deny destabilization, but the U.S. has a history. The Bush administration supported the attempted coup against Chavez a decade ago, and the U.S. claims to stand for no more coups in Latin America, only transition through democratic means. And the U.S. openly has an interest in seeing that power in Venezuela goes to more friendly hands. So what was those Americans' role, and what is our country's legitimate role there?
Well, I think the United States learned its lesson in whether real or perceived to be intervening in Venezuela or other countries can be counterproductive. So I don't think these individuals that have been accused of spying on the military or doing other things in Venezuela were actually doing very much. It was more of a way of rallying people around the flag in finding an outside enemy for the Chavistas. But this is a question for the United States. Many countries want us to be involved. Many countries don't want us to be involved. But how do you maintain a strong bilateral relationship, but also be very cognizant and careful of sovereignty and of the growing role Latin American or other nations around the world are playing on a world stage?
Shannon O'Neill, a senior fellow for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico, the United States, and the Road Ahead. Moises Naim is a senior associate in the International Economics Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's a former Venezuelan trade minister before Chavez and author of The End of Power, From Boardrooms to Battlefields and Churches to States, Why Being in Charge Isn't What It Used to Be. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us on this historic day.
Thank you, Brian.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, President Obama's new energy secretary and EPA chief. Are they the dynamic duo who'll fight global warming without needing new laws?